हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. Page 123, Chapter 71. Srila Prabhupada writes and concludes in Krishna book. It was during this time that Lord Sri Krishna, with the help of Arjuna, allowed the fire god Agni to devour the Kandava forest for his satisfaction. During the forest fire, Krishna saved the demon Mayasura, who was hiding in the forest. Upon being saved, Mayasura felt obliged to the Pandavas and Lord Krishna, and he constructed a wonderful assembly house within the city of Hastinapur. To please King Yudhishthira, Lord Krishna remained in the city of Hastinapur for several months. During his stay, he enjoyed strolling here and there. He used to drive on chariots with Arjuna, and many warriors and soldiers used to follow him. Right? So the point is that this association with Krishna is rare. It's not a commonplace thing. So we see is that how is it here is because of the devotees, because of the affection of Yudhishthira Maharaj and the Pandavas. Therefore, then we see that Krishna is here in Dwarka as if it's commonplace, but it actually isn't. It's only that devotion that then makes that Krishna comes, spends time, and is visible and appears to the devotees. So that's the point. When we're trying to please Krishna, then he appears. We start to understand him, we start to appreciate, we find the process is working for us. So many different things happen. But that means we're making that attempt to please Krishna, and then he's reciprocating. Yes.
Can we say the same thing now? For the
association of pure devotees? Yes. It means association. Any devotee, it's not commonplace. Because like Lord Chaitanya is telling Sanatana Goswami that in the whole universe, you know, where you have unlimited living entities, only a very small amount is human. And of those that are human, only a small amount are civilized. And of those that are civilized, then there's very few who, you know, are, how you say, trying to understand, you know, what is transcendence. And of those who are trying to understand, very few do. And of those who do understand, then to be, you know, properly situated in that and to be in the transcendental position, then there's hardly any of those. Then out of so many of those, then you'll hardly find a devotee. So that's actually the position of the devotee. Now, how much realization is there is another thing, but that's the position of the devotee. That's what's special, that one has faith in the eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's rare. Because many have faith that, okay, there is a God, he is in control, you know, that he's eternal, he's unlimited, you know, he's the witness, the judge, the creator, maintainer, destroyer. These kind of things they can relate to. More creator and destroyer, not as much maintainer. But that he has an eternal form, he has relationships, that's hard for them to understand. So that even those who do accept this, very few have that appreciation. So devotees are actually quite rare. Then, so within that devotional service, then we try to advance. Then you have, that's then the standard. So that's above everybody. So even the neophyte that has faith, they're above all other classes. No matter how intelligent, how economically situated, powerful they are, religious they are, academic they are, how good facility or how much they can enjoy themselves, still that devotee is better. Because they're actually doing what is supposed to be done by the living entity. And all the others, they're actually just failing in different ways.
you know, that's that.
So then that's the whole idea, is that Krishna is very rare to be appreciated, and that also means that the devotees are very rare. And so that we get that opportunity, that is special. So it's not an exaggeration on these things. Other things where we're saying, yes, they're in the heavenly planets, they're deathless, and they're there eternally, these are exaggerations. That's why then the offense to the holy name is, don't consider it like that kind of thing. That there you exaggerate to inspire people, so here we're exaggerating. No. But the holy name is just, it's basically using the British approach. You know, where they say as little as possible. Like that. So whatever's there, it's much greater than that. This is just to give you an indication. Is that... Yeah? Okay. So chapter 72, the slaying of the demon Jarasandha. Pratigya. Krishna is conquered by the love of one who has conquered his senses. Right? Because if one has that love for Krishna and one has conquered the senses, means that the love for Krishna is unimpeded by anything else. The engagement of the senses will be about pleasing Krishna. Well, if one hasn't conquered the senses, you want to please Krishna, but you want to please your senses in the meantime. Does that make sense? So it will have that. So therefore, he's conquered by the love of someone like this. Yeah? Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna, hearing King Yudhishthira's request, and then arranged for Bhimasena to defeat Jarasandha. One day, King Yudhishthira addressed Lord Krishna as he sat in the royal assembly. My Lord, I wish to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, right? So it says one day. It doesn't mean that the next day or that day, or they're there and they're, you know, it's just like they're relaxed and enjoying the company. And then at some point he says, one, you know, I would like to do this.
Those kings that were imprisoned by Jarasandha, they're still in prison.
Yes, but they're... By being in prison, what has happened to them?
I don't know.
No, but I'm just saying, by what we know of them and what they describe. Yes. So a little more time just means more Krishna conscious. Yudhishthira is already Krishna conscious and interacting. And so, you know, in other words, why would it go for a few months? Why not immediately? Because Krishna could come back and stay. Because to set up for the Rajasuya, these kind of sacrifices generally, from what I've seen, they take a year to accomplish. That means you're setting up for, you know, many, many months, 8, 9, 10 months. Then you're performing the sacrifice itself. So it appears that in this one, it's not as You don't notice that the time is so long. That's not specifically said. But point is this, he'll be there for a long time anyway. That I remember, I'm not sure in the first canto, if it's not mentioning that he had been like 14 months there or something. So in other words, they came, they were some months, then they went to kill Jarasandha. Now they started the arrangements for the thing. Then they had, and I think then there was rainy season. So only after that, then he went back. So, yeah, don't worry.
I'm not worried for them so much, because they are okay.
Oh, I see, okay. See, the whole point is that Krishna will never do anything that's not good for you. Now, for the child, doing the things that they should do at a particular time, do in their consideration, from their perspective, is it good? No. Yeah. So that's what you're dealing with.
And if we dig it deeper, sometimes it's good to wait for some things, especially with other people, and sometimes it's better to do it immediately. Help them.
Yes. So in this case, because Krishna knowing all, it was better to wait. No, not for him. He could go at any time.
No, they were. He knows. That's
the point. He knows. But that's the thing is, we know he knows. So therefore, then we can. We may not know, but we know that he knows. You know, it's just like you can say, Krishna knows. You know, we don't know, and this other person may or may not know. Right? So, but point is, Krishna knows, and we don't. So that's where the faith comes in. That's where the surrender. So we know that Krishna will do what's best, and so he'll see whatever is to be done. So, if we work on, like here, Krishna's conquered by the love of one who has conquered his senses. So we can work on trying to develop that love for Krishna and trying to control the senses that is always engaged in his service. Yes, devotion is service. So as much as we're always engaged, then that will bring us closer to Krishna. Otherwise, you know, Krishna's there, we don't notice it, because as Brahman, he is there in everything. As Paramatma, he's there in everything. So we're actually, the soul is never at any time ever separated from Krishna. Never. There's never been a time when it was there or is or will be. They're always with Krishna, but we just don't see it. That's what we were discussing this morning about the Shastra Chakshus. It's not what I see with my senses, and then based on that, then creating the speculation. It's a matter of hearing what Shastra says, and then on that, then I start to contemplate, and then see how that matches with what I see. And if what I see doesn't match what the Shastra says, what I see is the problem. So I have to start adjusting my consciousness so I see like the Shastra says. Then when we do that, then I think as Krishna points out, there's a verse where he's saying that once one gains this kind of position, then, you know, he will not consider anything else happiness. And he'll consider this the greatest gain. Right? Because once one comes to that place, then there's nothing else. All these other things seem to be important, but they're not really important. You know, just like when you're a kid, so many things are so important. Then as you get older, they're not very important anymore. You know, so like that. And so what's important for us now as we advance, then those won't be so important anymore. So, and when that comes, it's not that, like we saw in the previous point, that coming up, then whatever was there before that we found a disturbance, then was all worthwhile. So whatever you consider a problem now, then when it does come to that perfectional platform, you'll consider it was all worthwhile. So, something to look forward to. In this sacrifice, okay, he's continuing. My Lord, I wish to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. In this sacrifice, people uninterested in your devotional service will be able to see firsthand the superiority of your devotees and the inferiority of non-devotees. Right? So that's what means it's going to say you worship the supreme, you know, whoever's in the assembly. Now, in this assembly, then Krishna being there, you know, the great devotees, all the demigods and that, and all these other kings, they'll be able to see who's who. Right? So that's the position, is that he's engaging it in devotional service. It's not the Rajasuya sacrifices devotional service. It's that he's going to engage it in devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point of all religious activities. They themselves aren't devotional service. But being engaged in Krishna's service, then they are. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the potato. They're engaged in Krishna's service, now they're prasad, they're transcendental. It's not that, you know, these were transcendental potatoes before you started. You know? The guy's weighing out the potatoes and said, no, don't give me that mundane potato, I saw that. You know? So it's not like that. It's that you engage those things. So the activities that we are doing in devotional service, those are the standard recommended activities for human beings. But it's the actual proper application. In other words, there's the form of it, but then there's the consciousness of it. Because otherwise, you see, the materialists, they're following the form because they find it gives the best material results. But that's all they're going to get. While the devotees, they follow it to please Krishna. And so that gives the highest happiness. So any happiness that comes from the well-performed religious activity, that's not actually what's interesting to them. It comes along with it, but you're not actually interested. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you go to the store and you buy something like that, and then they give you some little thing along with it, you know. It just comes along with it. You know, you get a toothbrush or, you know, yeah.
So can we say that there is indirect and there is direct? Say, you know, Navavida Bhakti. You know, Navavida Bhakti, it is direct. It's directed
yes.
towards Krishna.
Yes.
But then the highest level is that we do direct, but with the proper mood of the sampradaya.
Yes,
and
yes.
And that's perfect.
Yes, yes, yes. That's what we're trying to do. So, see, secondary is always secondary. It's just the nature of it. You have Krishna as the primary, then you have his energies. So now there's a non-difference, but at the same time it's for us, because we are energy, and then only when we're manifest, then we appreciate it. So the difference is there, right? So now it's when it's not connected to Krishna, you emphasize the difference. When it is connected to Krishna, you don't have to emphasize the difference. Because it's like, you know, like the example of iron and fire. Let's say I'm getting up early in the morning, I'm taking my bath, you know, I'm doing all these things. So doing that for Krishna, then we don't make a distinction that this is not devotional service. Right? Because it is. Because it's in the fire. But Smarta is also getting up, doing things, putting on their tilak and the whole thing. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that all these secondary things, when they're engaged in Krishna service, you don't have to distinguish them separately. That's why in the pastimes, you only bring out how much that you understand how to connect. The difficulty is that we don't know the difference, you know, from our backgrounds between what's pious and impious. Means we have our definition within, you know, the boy and girl can go out and do all kinds of stuff out in the bushes. You know, that's okay. You know, that's normal. That's, you know, just young people enjoying youth and that. But if the girl gets pregnant, now that's nonsense. You know, it's that we define our own definition of what's pious and impious. You know what I'm saying? But that's not really the way it works. So those things that are given by Prabhupada, these are the ones that are directly recommended by the acharyas and practiced by them in devotional service. But still, they're religious activities. Does that make sense? The form of it. But we're using them just to please Krishna, so we don't make a distinction. They are devotional service. Does that make sense? You know, you get the bucket, the rag, and then the bucket, how you use the rag, you know, to clean the floor. That's just the religion of buckets and rags. But because we're cleaning the temple, now it's just devotional service. Right? And now if I'm cleaning, you know, some office building, then it's just, I follow it nicely, then it's religious because I did it properly and the people are pleased. And I don't, you know, I don't follow the religion of a bucket and rag, then they're not going to be pleased, and so it's not going to give a good material result. Right? So, not knowing these things, then we tend to just take it that these are the direct activities, are, you know, those are devotional service, and anything else is not. Does that make sense? So then you have direct devotional service, which is very nicely in devotional service. Then we have all the indirect is just not devotional service. So we understand how religion works. Then all the indirect can also be engaged in Krishna service. Because I'm wiping the floor nicely because I'm trying to please Krishna. Right? Now, if we go into the office building, then the person is trying to clean the floor nicely to please the boss. And if being pleased the boss, then he'll have his job, he'll get paid, he might move up, he might become a superintendent. Is that so? It has all those aspects. So it doesn't have it's still the same religion of the, you know, the bucket and cloth, but and how they work together. Now, if it's a mop, it's used a little bit differently. You know, so it's just they all have their natural nature, but when we see it in line with how that connects to Krishna, what's the recommendation in Scripture, that makes it so much easier to see it in connection to Krishna. And as we use speculative methods and make up our own, then it's harder to see. So we're being practical. So we're trying to follow various religious processes, whether they are recommended or not. right? Whether they're actually dharma, adharma, or vidharma, that we're not distinguishing so much. Because, you know, so, but what we, once we accept, that has to be done nicely. What we don't accept, then that's not necessary. But what we're not catching is that it's the engagement in Krishna's service that makes it devotional. Does that make sense? So we're not making the distinction, not because, you know, we're so absorbed in the primary we don't see the secondary. We're so absorbed in the secondary we don't really see the primary. We know it's connected to Krishna. It's about Krishna. So we take them that they're non-different there, looking at from the secondary rather than from the primary. Because then when you get into another religious activity, then that hasn't been shown as directly connected to Krishna, so it's not at all, it's just Maya. Rather than everything's connected to Krishna, everything is His energy, it all works under His authority. Therefore, you agreeing and following that authority and doing that to please Krishna becomes devotional service. It won't give as much taste as the direct activity. But the point is, being connected to Krishna, then it's nice. And once you come to the you know, liberated platform, then there is no difference. Because you see everything connected to Krishna. But as you come to the point, is then you bring it from the Brahman to the Paramat, Paramat to the Bhagavan. And then in Bhagavan, then that, you know, the aspect of sweetness, then it just keeps getting better and better. Is that... So that being able to distinguish, that's an advantage. Only because then you can see how to connect things to Krishna and not. Not that the ability to distinguish between things is the important thing. That's what intelligence does. But you can distinguish based on Krishna and recommendation about how to please Krishna, then that's what we're doing. Is that... Then there's nothing separate. Yes?
So can we say that the... As you mentioned previously, the vision of Uttam Adhikari is that everything directly connected to Krishna, he sees like that. That's
yes.
His perception.
Yes, yes.
And then Kanishka, he sees that there is a lot of Maya, but then Krishna and Guru, they're connected, but
yes.
Everything else is like not connected.
Yes.
But then Madhyama, he understands everything is connectable. But then he has to make that effort to connect everything. Actually.
Yes, means he connects within his area and all that, but it means there's the intellectual process going on. With practice, then there may not be, but still it's there. But for the Uttama, there's no intellectual need of a process. It's a spontaneous activity. So that's why through sadhana, that then if your goal is that pure love for Krishna, it will come to the spontaneous platform. It's not that following rules will keep you on the platform of rules. It's following rules to get to following of rules. You know what I'm saying? It means following of rules to obtain the position of majesty, then it won't come to spontaneous devotional service. But following rules to please Krishna to come to the point of Braja Bhakti, it will naturally transfer. But, you know, we have to give up our attachment to it as we progress. You know, as the front foot is down, it's just like when we come to, let's say, the platform of, you know, just like when we come to the platform of Shraddha, we have to give up that life of non-Shraddha. You know, it has its own taste, because then what to do, and you can call people and make yourself the center of attention or do things to find out who you are and, you know, all that kind of jazz. So we give that up because now we know. Then when we find that having that faith that we now want to be and spend time with devotees and all that, we come to that platform where we value being with devotees, then we have to give up just that platform, just having Shraddha and faith and doing whatever we're doing. But we also now have, we put in the time of following that being with devotees, because we're comfortable there. Right? Then from being with the devotees, then naturally will come the inclination to be engaged in the proper or recommended activities of devotional service. Now when we can do that, then we will move forward into that platform and not just stay on the platform of Sadhu Sangha, where we're not committing ourselves to following the process. We hang out with the devotees and do things with devotees as they engage us, but otherwise for ourselves we're not committed to the process like they are. Does that make sense? See the difference? Then when it's there, is that as we go and we start to see that there's where the weakness is in our devotional service, and they're willing to accept that, but not identify with them, because that's the point. They're not us. They're a mistake.
that we're identifying with, and we're willing to take up the proper thing and make that endeavor, then that will situation in the Anartha Nivriti. Then we come to a point of being stable. Then we're going to be focused on that stableness of service, trying to please Krishna, and that rather than you know, oh, I'm doing this wrong, I'm doing that wrong, and so many things. You understand? Then what taste, it just naturally goes. So the higher up it goes, the easier it is to give up the lower one.
Yeah.
But still, one has to be progressive. If you're just thinking this is good enough, then you'll stay there. You know, Krishna will figure out some way to wake you up, but... You know.
We all know that under the guidance, the whole process is much easier than doing, you know, learning our lesson on our own. And we need
yes.
the guidance. So it seems that up to a certain point, and in Vaidhisadhana, we have... You know, like standard guidance, and it's really going, and everybody
yes.
knows.
Yes.
Because it's strict rules and regulations.
Yes.
But then later on the Raganuga sadhan, there's no guidance as such, so we're not sure. You know, we like, you know, checking this out and this and that. So we.
But the point is if we want to please Krishna, and that's our only purpose, it's not about anything else, then that will naturally develop. You know what I'm saying is that it means, is there a class? It's an international program. That is a class that everyone who joins Krishna consciousness as a brahmachari, then they're sent off to this class. And when they come back, then they have that natural spontaneous attraction to Hollow. But before that, they didn't. They didn't know. So they had to go to the school and they taught them. No, so that's the thing is, because you're engaged, this will come. And that's why we have the association of these great personalities. That's the importance of hearing the Bhagavatam, because it is discussions amongst great personalities about great personalities. And then we have the Acharya's commentaries. Right? And then we sit and we discuss it and try to understand it. Does that make sense? So, that's the thing, when we appreciate that position and all that, that's what moves us forward. Like that. That's why we have to be willing to give up the attachment to lower levels, you know, especially towards the aspect of mundane morality, justice, economics, you know, social prestige, position, you know, all these different kinds of things that was what we've grown up in, that we're just so used to. And so then we're taking that Krishna consciousness, okay, how you say, Krishna consciousness is good, right? Ethics is good. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is ethics. Or ethics is Krishna consciousness. You understand? So we have to be able to give up that attachment. No, it's that the ethics, those are just the proper mechanics to do something. Right? That's all. Just like, you know, unless you take the can opener and connect it to the top of the can, you're not going to get the can open. So without ethics being applied to activities, you can't actually make it progressive. That's just how progressive you want it to be. In karma, jnana, or bhakti. Because the point is ethics is the mood and attitude with which you apply knowledge and skills. Right? They're just the subtler point. Right? And so then that aspect is there, but that's based on the inherent nature that's in the metaphysics. But the metaphysics, that comes from Krishna. Right? So that whole thing is when we connect it to Krishna, then that's when ethics has its real meaning. That's the actual point. So when we're willing to appreciate what pleases Krishna, and then that may include ethics, which may be an area we like to work in. Mm-hmm. You know, or justice, or economics, or any of these kind of things. Then that's okay, but its taste is because of its connection to Krishna, not because it's ethics or economics or politics or... Does that make sense? So we have to be willing at some point to give up that taste. even though that may have been driving us for so long. You know, life's boring, and then some ethical issue comes up, or some economic opportunity, or some element of justice, and you know, like this, and so immediately then we're inspired, we get into it, and from that we may be able to engage nicely in Krishna's service, but we have to understand it's the service itself that makes it work, not the. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. So usually when we join ISKCON, at least in the past, it was more or less direct activity for the newcomers.
Yes.
And when we are all in ISKCON, it's supposed to be direct activity.
It means that when you start Krishna consciousness, you're going to start people on the direct activities of devotional service. Yes. And so now, as you get solid in that and are able to understand, then you start to show them how the indirect can be engaged in Krishna service also. See, it's just like, let's say you have a very new person to Krishna consciousness, right? Now, for them, all the activities that were more important to them before, what they did in the house or their work or this, isn't actually so important anymore because of the newness and freshness of Krishna consciousness. Right? So they do all the indirect activities just because they're supposed to, as a matter of course. But they're very absorbed and happy. Okay, on the weekend I can go, you know, be at the temple and spend time and all that. And during the week they have to do the jobs and this. But they'll, you know, they'll chant and they'll try to read a little bit because that's what's been recommended. And that's the nice thing in the day after the whole day, come back and okay, now they can do some chanting and reading. And so they feel very inspired because they're only seeing the direct activities because those are the actual main activities. Now, as they become situated in the direct activities, now you can start to show them how the same applies into the indirect by seeing it in relationship to the direct. And you expand it that way. That's how the community and everything else expands. So this idea of that devotees originally were doing all these nice things, are very fired up, and now we're being practical and getting into the community and making something sustainable. All they're saying is that we have traded the direct for the indirect, and they're trying to say that the direct, even though it's greater by volume and everything, and people can relate, that it's actually the most important thing out of devotional service. Rather than the direct activities are actually the main thing, and we're adding this. Because they can say, no, but we're also chanting and all this. Yes, but where's the emphasis? The emphasis is that we're fabulous because of the community development. Not because every day we come and sit together in the temple without any prajalpa, chant our rounds straight through, 5 to 7, just straight japa. That's what makes it special. And because of that, that's why you can do the community development. Right? But if you think it's that, no, because I'm doing community development, that's what makes community development, then they don't understand what's making things work. It's the same problem that the Shankarites and Shankyites and, you know, they're thinking that material energy is producing its own life. Right? I'm focusing on social development. And we're, you know, it's going nicely. Devotees are happy. We're getting all kinds of nice things. Things are developing. But I'm thinking it itself has the potency. How can a group of dead bodies getting together do anything? It's because the soul is there, because Krishna's potency is there. That's what makes it all work. So when we see it in relationship to, in other words, the indirect are only to support the direct. The whole reason you go 8 hours to work is that you have the money, a place to stay, and facilities so you can chant your japa. Right? So it's not that because it's 8 hours, it's more important than that 2 hours. It's what you have to do that. You know, it's just like cooking. How long does it take to cook? If you know, no, I'm saying the actual on-the-fire cooking. Depends what you're doing. So it's a trance, you know, you take it in there, you know, like this, and then stick it in the fridge, then take it out, and then, you know, yeah, it takes 24 hours. But otherwise, if you go in, you put the pan on the fire, you know, put things in, to put it in 20 minutes it's cooked, if not sooner, like that. So the cooking process technically takes 20 minutes. Only if it's an elaborate preparation, it may take a little longer. But otherwise, that's all it takes. But now the preparation time, the backup time, the, you know, the marketing, the planning, the cutting, the cleaning, all that, now that takes a huge amount of time. Now, what would happen if the kitchen assistant
because it, you know, all this goes on because of him. You know, it's like, why that guy should get the star? He spent 20 minutes doing it. I spent, you know, 5 hours doing it. I should get the star. Right? And if, you know, and if it's that, I'm leaving. Then let's see what he can do. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. So we have to know what is primary, what's secondary. That's why the importance. Otherwise, in this modern kind of idea of making everything equal, that's actually impersonalism. We're thinking, no, it's more personal. Everyone's equal, everyone's the same. It's more impersonal. Why, do you want to be the same as everyone? I remember we had one devotee from France. And what do you call it? What's that? I can't never say it. Champs-Élysées. He lived on there. You know, old family, they're from there, you know, big apartment and that kind of thing. So that kind of class. And he would be there and he would, you know, be doing things because he has that kind of, he understands some nice way of doing something. You know, how to wear a dhoti or what kind of dhoti or how to wear a chadar or something like that. And because it was so good, within some time, other devotees would start to do it. And the first day that he comes out and sees all these other guys wearing it, you know, I'm thinking that they're cool, he turns around, goes back, and puts on something else, and will never wear that again. Right? So, if we're talking about the modern society where it's all about the uniqueness, like that. You know what I'm saying? So this whole idea of that, oh, everybody's the same, it's all like this, that's not actually what people want. People that are below the standard would like that, but people who are at the standard don't want that at all. They want everybody to be unique and individual. It means it's within a category of standard that everybody's, let's say, very clean or you know, or very formal or very aesthetic or, you know, something. There's some common point within, but within that they're all unique. So that's the point, is that we're all devotees, but within that, everybody's unique. But that uniqueness is not, I do what I want. It's within the rules I'm following, and so the nature of the devotion, the particular tone, that will come with time. We just have to worry about the sadhana, right? In the spiritual world, on the transcendental platform, then we'll have that specific unique. But anyway, even the conditioning is unique because it's all the universal form. And each soul, is their attachments are slightly different, so their conditioning is slightly different. That's why the Vedic system can accommodate all the uniqueness. And then we're saying, oh, why this is up, this is down, this is that, it should all be the same. It's just impersonalism. It's not actually a personal system. Though it's presented that all the same is the personal, and the differences is impersonal, but it's exactly the opposite. You understand? So, it's because we can't tell what's primary and what's secondary. And we jumble it all up together. And then according to our conditioning, those things in the khichdi that we specifically like, then that's, you know, it's like you got the sabji and you pick out all the paneer or something. You know, that's the good part. Leave all the juice for something. You know, how many times they're serving the sabji? Yeah, I'll take sabji. No juice. Like that. So what they should do is just, you have a line like that, and put all the Westerners in the front of the line, and then put all the Bangladeshis in the end of the line, because they say more juice, because that's what the taste is. Yeah, so then it'll work out.
Depends what's the taste.
Yeah, I'm just saying, the point is we pick out what we want and leave the rest of it, but the whole point is that everything has its its connection to Krishna. Everyone has their nature, and so then that connection, then everybody's satisfied. So in this way, then, you know, everybody's happy.
Like South Indians like juice, and in,
well, I didn't want to bring up South Indians because I thought that it might bring up the thing, but that was my first option. I thought, okay, better I use Bangladeshi. I've seen that, like that. You're going around with the rasa. They don't want the sabji. Means they'll eat the sabji in the beginning, but as they go, they just want to eat the juice with the rice. They just get the flavor and not all that. But they'll start with everything, but then they'll go to the, just like, yeah, the rasa. Yeah, just like that. Do they still do that when they're serving the rasa and then you eat some with your juice? Yeah, okay.
No? It means while they're serving it, they just put it in your hand and you drink it. Like that. And then they put it on there and you mush it. And
pay it. I guess in this life we don't understand that.
No. Yeah, it's something that it's, he say, you just get it from those. Yeah, we won't come into that. So. Think of where we were. Where were we?
Primary, secondary.
Primary and secondary.
Individual.
And about the individual. Yeah, so the individuality becomes useful when it's seen in connection with the primary and secondary. Then we can see is that uniqueness of everybody's position, what service they're doing and all that, being done for Krishna, then that becomes very special. There's no problem there. Otherwise, we have to make everyone the same, and that way we feel that it's Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, we're talking about advancement, where we're talking about the neophyte position. Right? That's the thing. Is when people join, they're all kind of the same. But as they develop in Krishna conscious, then the unique personality comes out. That's the difference. Well, if you see these other lines, they all go in unique and different, and they come out the same. Right? That's the point, is that with us, the more it goes, the more unique and different they are. Yes?
Regarding the religious activity.
About the?
The religious activity can be either direct or indirect.
Religious activity. No, it means you have the religious activities that are about direct, you have those that are indirect. But what we're meaning is that when they become connected to Krishna on the transcendental platform, you don't need to make the distinction. Like that. So that's the thing, is that we, having not made the distinction, which is fine, that we're chanting, dressing as devotees, doing the things that we do, but we're not understanding that it's actually religious activities that are engaged in Krishna's service. So therefore we think the religious activities we have to perform outside of the direct temple activities, then they're in their own category, when it's just the same principle. So then we end up with, okay, devotees before, they lived in the temple, they did all that, now we're not living in the temple, so we have to do things totally different. The approach is different, it's about maintenance, it's not about just getting out there and this. So all it is they can't see the difference. They're talking on a subject that they actually are not seeing the connection to Krishna in its fullest way. Does that make sense?
Sometimes I would like Yudhishthira Maharaj say, or Nanda Maharaj, they were able to engage in this kind of activities of Jajasri Yajna in Kundari Yajna.
Yes.
Very well, you know. But then that requires that one should be, you know, at a very advanced level of devotional service. Then
you can do that. Means they can engage yajnas and stuff in the Lord's service. But the point is for us, it's what is recommended that we do. So Rajasuya is not something that is recommended that we do. Mm-hmm. But the 10 samskars is. So we'll do those things like Nanda Baba does. You know, we may not be able to give 10,000 cows in charity, but, you know, we'll be, you know, very comfortable in giving charity. Does that make sense? So we balance the whole thing, but we're doing this because it's pleasing to Krishna. We have to see that. That's why the pastimes are given, how he's doing it, this is where it comes from. So it's not about the secondary, it's about the primary pleasing Krishna. But these are the secondary forms that Krishna uses. They're giving to us here. We can follow them to please Krishna, or you can follow them to not please Krishna. So then we'll go as, okay, yes, but all these things can be used nicely in Krishna's service. No, but the smartas do that, so we throw it out. But if we do that, is, yeah, but all the malechas and yavanas do all this, so why are we accepting that? Is yukta vairagya prabhu? Why is that yukta vairagya and not this other's yukta vairagya? So in other words, yukta vairagya means it's connected to Krishna without an attachment for what we'll get ourselves. That's yukta vairagya, whether it's Vedic or not Vedic.
So then can you say that direct religious activity can be defined as devotional service or devotional activity?
Means engaging in direct devotional service, then only devotional service is direct. But the point is what we're engaging. It means we don't make that distinction, but at the same time you can distinguish if you need to. Mother Jashoda cooks for Krishna. But we just talk about Mother Jashoda and her service to Krishna. We don't distinguish. But you can say her cooking for Krishna is the secondary, her love for Krishna and parental Ras, that's the primary. You know, so we can, but you don't need to. Does that make sense? Because it's not necessary. It doesn't enhance the mood.
Yeah, because it's primary service, oneness that is being spoken.
Yes, because if it's done with Krishna, then Krishna being everything, it's one. It has that oneness aspect. There's no need. That's Vishuddha Dvaita. It's that oneness. But because that's not appreciated, people stay down on the secondary platform, therefore Madhva has to come along and go, it's two. Because they can't catch the oneness. They only catch the oneness in that on the impersonal platform.
Yes.
Okay. They will also be able to see your lotus feet, means all these different devotees and everyone. Lord Krishna extolled Yudhishthira's proposition. Your scheme is so excellent that it will spread your fame throughout the universe, right? He's only caring about the devotees. Devotees just caring about him. Indeed, all living entities should desire that this sacrifice be performed. It means everybody should see that it's done because it's all devotional service. To make this sacrifice possible, however, you must first defeat all the kings of the earth and collect all the necessary paraphernalia. Right? So then what does that mean? So that means Jarasandha. Right? Collecting the paraphernalia is not going to be the problem. Right? And that you just go and get it. But to do that, then you have to, you can only do that if you have the, all the kings are agreeing. And then if they agree, they give tribute, that gives you the facility by which you can now send your people and get all the stuff. Satisfied with Lord Krishna's words, King Yudhishthira sent his brothers to conquer the various directions. After they had conquered or won the fealty of the kings in their assigned directions, they brought back abundant wealth to Yudhishthira, right? Because now that means you have the facility to do. That means all the directions were conquered. They informed, however, that Jarasandha could not be defeated. So all other kings had been except Jarasandha. Right, so now it's obvious. Well, we can't do the sacrifice unless, because that was his point before. Uddhava, is that the key is going to be defeating Jarasandha. Right, by saying it that way, then everybody in the assembly would be happy because they wanted to immediately go and fight. So yes, that is the important point. But it's the important point in connection with the yajna. So that would please Narad Muni and Yudhishthira. Right? As King Yudhishthira pondered how he could subdue Jarasandha, Sri Krishna revealed to him the means for doing so, following the previous advice of Uddhava. Right? So it had already been worked out. Now he starts to contemplate. Since he's contemplating, now Krishna reveals.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there's no need to do it first. Why do it first? Right? You do all the other things. You've conquered the world. Now it's just Jarasandha. You know, it works out nicely this way. Bhima, Arjuna, and Sri Krishna then disguised themselves as brahmanas and went to the palace of Jarasandha, who is very devoted to the brahminical class. They introduced themselves as brahmanas to King Jarasandha, flattering him by praising his reputation for hospitality, and requested him to grant their desire. Seeing the marks of bowstrings on their limbs, Jarasandha concluded they were warriors and not brahmanas. But still, even though fearful, he promised to fulfill whatever desire they might have. Right? Because he also is, he's as strong as 10,000 elephants. What can go wrong, technically? But he's fearful because he doesn't know exactly what they're going to ask. At that point, Lord Krishna discarded his disguise and asked Jarasandha to fight him in one-to-one combat. But Jarasandha refused, claiming that Krishna was a coward because he had once fled the battlefield. Jarasandha also declined to fight Arjuna on the plea that he was inferior in age and size. But Bhima he considered a worthy opponent, right? Now, if he had just said, okay, we want a battle and all this, he might then consider it as a whole. We want a battle. Then he might go, no, we're not having one. You understand? So you present that as a thing and he's saying that this is improper. But he immediately says, okay, I'll fulfill your desire. Okay, then you fight with me. Right? And so then he's going to go, no. So now he's already accepted that he's fighting. But it's just not you. And not you, but him. See, Krishna is so expert. Right?
Seems like he's in control.
Yes. Yes, that's the whole point. You know, that's why the Ayurveda says it's time for the girl to get her ears pierced.
But now it's like, oh, but it's going to be painful. Is it this? I don't know. And this and that. So, you know, you don't know. You should get your ears pierced. No, but that's not how you approach it. Okay, it's time to get your ears pierced. We haven't said do you want to or not or anything. Do you shall we use the solid gold needles or the solid silver needles? Which do you want? You know, who wants the silver ones, right? You know, you go for the gold, right? You know, so yeah. So it's done. So you don't even discuss on whether it's done or not. So that's what Ayurveda says. That's how you get people to make decision, that they're making a decision within already having accepted the position.
Why would Ayurveda say that?
Because Ayurveda deals with, means, what is one of the causes of, three causes of disease?
Imbalance.
No, imbalance of those, that'll go, but what can cause the mucus pyelonephra to get imbalanced?
Anxiety.
Anxiety?
Uncleanliness.
Uncleanliness and?
Indigestion.
Yeah, indigestion, overeating. So anxiety, where does that come from? The mind. So therefore, what is the health of the mind? How the health of the intelligence, all these things. So in other words, the whole overall of health for the living entity is explained by Ayurveda. But the majority of it is on describing the physical. Because that takes so much to do. The other one is more just you understand it and you do it. Right? You don't have to go, you know, the Himalayas at this time of the year in this particular place to get this herb, you know, to do this medicine. You just understand it and use it. So, yes.
You see, but Srila Prabhupada, he used that particular technique of not giving people third option, and it really worked good with him. But then sometimes we see others, they try to use it, and they do it externally, expertly.
Right.
But then, and at the moment it works. But then, after some time, people get mental about it because they realize they've been cheated. They were not offered the third option. So
you wanted the iron needles for piercing the ears for an option?
No, it's like I don't want to pierce my ears at all.
Okay, that's great. So then, when you're, you know, all the other girls get these nice gold earrings and you don't have any place to put them, then. So the thing is that Prabhupada knows what these are for, what effect they have, in other words, what is the primary effect of all these activities? Anything you're doing, what effect does it have? And so that itself is then why one is inspired. That's why it always has to be on the primary. It's not a technique. The problem is using the technique in devotional service. But if we just use the technique itself as management or something else, then it's going to be one secondary activity compared to another secondary. And whichever one we have, we always think it's wrong. You know, it's like the shirt.
Yeah.
You know, whichever one you wear, you know, what was wrong with the other one? So whatever we get, you know, okay, this year we'll go to, Singapore. And then once we, you know, and that's, we're all excited. Once we have the tickets and all that, we find everybody else is going to Bali. Is that, you know, did we make the right choice? You know? Are we missing something? Is this, you know? So that's all. That's the way. The second. There's unlimited secondary. Pleasing Krishna is one thing. It has unlimited manifestations, but it's one thing. So when we keep rooted there, then all these other things, even we get mental about it, but it's connected to Krishna. It's not a problem. So, you know, like the gopis thinking that, you know, why did we listen to this, you know, this boy, he cheated us, and, you know, like this and that. But they're thinking about Krishna, and they're absorbed in ecstasy of remembering Krishna. So when the primary is there, it always works. But if we don't see it like that, we just see it as a managerial technique, it's going to be a problem. So just as you're saying here, you can use the Vedic things, but they'll be a problem because they can't themselves give satisfaction to the soul. And even less, you use the modern stuff. Right? Because the point is after 6 months or 2-3 years, then they don't even use that system anymore. But the system I made, that's from Ayurveda.
You know, and so that's Satyuga when they did the churning of the milk potion. You know, so that's you know, at least minimum 4 million years old. Right? So it works. It always, because it's an eternal principle. But nothing can give you satisfaction. Nature is wonderful and beautiful because Krishna's made that beauty, but still, just that beauty in its own, it gets old after a while. But when we see it in relation to Krishna, and Krishna's the beauty of it, then it doesn't have that. Because it reminds us of Krishna. But it's not that we maintain our attachment to the forest. We develop our attachment to Krishna. It may happen to take place in the forest. Does that make sense? Because the residents of Vrindavan, when they go to Kurukshetra, you don't have, it's open ground. It doesn't really have forests like Vrindavan. But the point is that love for Krishna doesn't get affected. How they want to express it, then going to the forest and doing all these things, then is so nice. So the secondary assists the primary, but the primary is unaffected. Does that make sense? It's just whether it's in Sambhog or in deeper lumber. But Jarasandha refused, claiming that Krishna was a coward because he had once fled the battlefield. He finesses the 17 times he single-handedly defeated him, but hey. Jarasandha also declined to fight Arjuna on the plea that he was inferior in age and size, which he would be. Yeah, he's smaller. But Bhima he considered a worthy opponent. Thus Jarasandha handed Bhima a club and took up another himself. And they all went outside the city to begin the fight, right? So they didn't do it inside the house, right? And then as they knock stuff over, then they're like, oh, I'll pay for that, or you know, stuff like that. No, they didn't have to do that. They just go outside, you know? You know, you even see in the modern kind of thing, you know, let's take this outside, you know, like that. After the fight had gone on for some time, it became clear that the two opponents were too equally matched for either to gain victory. Lord Krishna then split a small tree branch in half, thus showing Bhima how to kill Jarasandha. Bhima threw Jarasandha on the ground, stepped on one of his legs, seized the other with his arms, and proceeded to tear him apart from his genitals to his head. Yeah. Seeing Jarasandha dead, his relatives and subjects cried out in lamentation. Lord Krishna then appointed Jarasandha's son, ruler of Magadha, and released the kings of Jarasandha had imprisoned. And so then, he, you know, his son is there. He would be the natural next one to take place. If he's qualified and all that, the people have faith in him, then he's put there. Now, if the son is useless, the people aren't faith, he'll put someone that the people would have faith in. If there's no one there, then he'll appoint someone from his own seat. You know, so they don't disrupt what's already going on, because it's not about that it's the control doesn't mean that absolute control. Control means that you're the one on top of it. They manage it, but you're on top of them. So you don't have to manage the kingdom, you have to manage the manager who manages the kingdom. Right? Does that make sense? So Shloka Anushrana. Summary of verses 1-11. The Lord agrees with Maharaj Yudhishthira's desire. 12-14, the Pandavas conquer all directions. 15-46, Bhima slays Jarasandha. Verses 1-11, the Lord fulfills Maharaj Yudhishthira's desire. Sukadeva Goswami said, one day as King Yudhishthira sat in the royal assembly, surrounded by eminent sages, brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishnavas, and also by his brothers, spiritual masters, family elders, blood relations, in-laws, and friends. Right? A lot happening in court. Right? He addressed Lord Krishna as everyone listened. Footnote 45. After several days relaxing, at an appropriate time, Yudhishthira spoke. Mm-hmm. From Srila Jiva Goswami. Right? So that's the point. They've relaxed for several days, and then when the time is appropriate, then they are bringing the point up. It's not that it's in court, you just, you know, okay, what's on today's agenda, and then just leave it up. When it's appropriate, he brings it up. Sri Yudhishthira said, O Govinda, I desire to worship your auspicious, opulent expansions by the Rajasuya sacrifice, the king of Vedic ceremonies.
Please make our endeavor a success, my Lord. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. My dear Lord Krishna, the sacrifice known as Rajasuya Yajna is to be performed by the emperor and is considered the king of all sacrifices. By performing this sacrifice, I wish to satisfy all the demigods who are your empowered representatives within this material world. And I wish that you will kindly help me in this great venture so it may be successfully executed. As far as the Pandavas are concerned, we have nothing to ask from the demigods. We are personally fully satisfied to be your devotees. As you say in Bhagavad Gita, persons bewildered by material desires worship the demigods. But my purpose is different. I want to perform this Rajasuya sacrifice and invite the demigods to show that they have no power independent of you, that they are your servants and you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So in doing that, he worships all the demigods, and he'll do that so that way they're all invited. And then he'll worship them. But then in doing that, they'll also be there for the worship of Krishna and understand that their connection to Krishna. That's the whole idea. Foolish persons with a poor fund of knowledge consider your lordship an ordinary human being. Sometimes they try to find fault in you, and sometimes they defame you. Therefore, I wish to perform this Rajasuya Yajna. I wish to invite all the demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other exalted chiefs of the heavenly planets. And in that great assembly of demigods from all parts of the universe, I want to substantiate that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that everyone is your servant. Right? So, another point why we can't do this. Could we invite them? How would we invite them? Where would we go to invite them? But he can invite them.
Send them a message.
I just send it to Indra's Facebook page. There's only one problem. He's got 33 million friends. Yes, heavenly Facebook. Maharaj Yudhishthira.
We can see that Maharaj Yudhishthira is really the front of the stage.
Yes, yes. He's going to invite everybody.
And the big people.
Yes, all the big people and that. So that's the thing. He's preaching to the top. Yudhishthira Maharaj continued, purified persons who constantly serve, meditate upon, and glorify your shoes, which destroy everything inauspicious, are sure to obtain freedom from material existence. O lotus-navelled one, even if they desire something in this world, they obtain it, whereas others, those who do not take shelter of you, are never satisfied, O Lord. So they're satisfied because of service to Krishna, and whatever it is that they're looking for, they get. Right? Because that one says, now, a question might arise from this point, but notice which half of the two points being made that we bring the question up on. Does that make sense? Even if they desire something in this world, they obtain it, right? Whereas others who do not take shelter of you are never satisfied. So, I want it, I'm not getting it. Why? Then look at the first half of the sentence. Purified persons who constantly serve, meditate upon, and glorify your shoes, which destroy everything inauspicious, are sure to obtain freedom from material existence. Then the two go together. Yeah. You have one, the other comes automatically. It comes for free. You know, it's like you buy something, they just stick it in the bag. You know, long term, yes. The BBT purport states, Srila Prabhupada writes in this connection that liberated Krishna conscious persons, quote, do not even desire to become freed from this material existence or to enjoy material opulences. Their desires are fulfilled by Krishna conscious activities. As far as we, King Yudhishthira, are concerned, we are fully surrendered unto your lotus feet, and by your grace we are so fortunate to see you personally. Therefore, naturally, we have no desire for material opulences. The verdict of the Vedic wisdom is that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I want to establish this fact. And I also want to show the world the difference between accepting you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and accepting you as an ordinary, powerful, historical person. Right, so we see, Duryodhana wanted to do the Rajasuya, but he couldn't. But his was just for prestige and the material benefits he'd get. That's all. So it's the exact opposite of this. So because he's not on the purified position, therefore we see that he's never satisfied. For someone like Yudhishthira Maharaj, because he's purified, he has no material desire, so whatever they do, then those results come. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the whole point with energy. When you don't want it, you'll get it. When you want it, you can't have it. So as soon as you can bend your head around that one, then everything works. So the only thing to do that is please Krishna. You want it for Krishna, then it works. Does that make sense? Yeah. I wish to show the world that one can attain the highest perfection of life simply by taking shelter at your lotus feet. Exactly as one can satisfy the branches, twigs, leaves, and flowers of an entire tree simply by watering the root. That's the whole point. When the root's watered, all those material desires we have, they're satisfied. Because they're connected to Krishna. So, if we're saying, how come my desires aren't fulfilled? I'm a devotee, I'm serving, I'm this, because we're not connecting them to the root. So, happiness is coming from Krishna. He's the one that's Satchitananda. Right? So, if we want happiness, it has to come from Krishna. So, we connect what we're doing to Krishna, then that happiness flows through whatever it is that we're doing, whether it's trunk, whether it's branches, whether it's twig, whether it's leaves. It doesn't matter. Then that happiness will flow. But we have to please Krishna. That's the point. Yes? Thus, if one takes to Krishna consciousness, his life becomes fulfilled both materially and spiritually. So we mean that. But the point is, because of the spiritual connection, the material gets enlivened. Just like material matter is dead matter, just sitting there, when the Lord glances, only then it becomes animated. So in the same way as our material desires can only give happiness if they're connected to Krishna. Right? We like to manage, we manage for Krishna. So until we connect it, that's the only place we get that satisfaction.
But we still say that those material desires are connected to Krishna, they're not material in the...
Yes, they're not.
So no material desires can bring satisfaction.
Yes. But when we say here both material and spiritual, when we're using this platform, then we're distinguishing, meaning that those things that come through engagement with the external energy. Because for such persons as Yudhishthira, they don't see any difference. It's still Krishna's energy. So they're not in the material world. But they use that as a distinction for the pastimes, for the different things like that. Because you make a distinction between what's primary and secondary. It just happens to be the secondary here is of inferior quality than the secondary in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Because the primary is pleasing Krishna, the Ichashakti. The secondary is the Jnana and Kriya. To engage, to get results to please Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti similarly explains King Yudhishthira's statement. We feel no great urgency to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, nor do we have any personal interest, since we are already seeing your lotus feet and, by your boundless mercy, have been taken into your personal association. But in this world, there are some whose hearts are contaminated and who thus think you are not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but an ordinary man. Or else they find fault with you and even criticize you. This is an arrow piercing our hearts. Therefore, to extract this arrow from our heart, we must call to this place on the pretext of the Rajasuya, Brahma, Rudra, and other wise brahmacharis and demigods who reside in each of the 14 planetary systems. When such an exalted congregation has assembled, it will be incumbent upon them to first arrange for the Agra Puja, or the first worship for the most worthy person present, right? Because they're all going to be worshipped, but you must worship the most worthy first, right? And so having worshipped Krishna first, now all of the worship then comes in line. And when they're directly shown that you, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the arrow piercing our heart will be removed. Right? Because that's also the aspect. Is here, as we can see, is they're seeing this that element of justice, but on the devotional platform. That seeing everything connected to Krishna, being devotionally inclined, that is just. Not seeing it connected to Krishna, not using it for Krishna's pleasure, that's unjust. So, therefore, as the king, he's using the Rajasuya to do that. You understand? So he's working within his field and accomplishing the same thing. A Brahmin would work within his field. A Vaishya within his. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is within your field, that then you take that and connect to Krishna. Not, oh, I can't do Rajasuya, so I can't connect everybody and I can't show everybody. No. The principle is that you are taking the area of your activities and connecting that to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah? Because here, this aspect of the arrow piercing the heart, that's given in the case in Manu in justice. Right? The arrow is piercing the heart, means there's an injustice has been done. So therefore the king has to remove that dart. And if he doesn't, then the dart will go to those who don't remove it. Right? Or to those who remove it, who try to remove it, do improper activity. Does that make sense? So in this way, because otherwise it's not, we're using it in that is something to be removed. So here, then the improper thing is people are seeing Krishna as an ordinary person. And so that then creates an arrow in his heart that has pierced his heart. So that will be removed by them seeing how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything's connected to him. Yeah? Marj Yudhishthir continued, "Therefore, O Lord of Lords, let the people of this world see the power of devotional service rendered to your lotus feet. Please show them, O Almighty One, the position of those Kurus and Srinjayas who worship you, and the positions of those who do not." Right, so here then, you know, it comes down to, Duryodhana, you know, and all of his followers, they're the ones that do not. Like that. Because there's now still this Dwapara Yuga, then they're in different families. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What are the Srinjayas?
They're one of the groups. They must be in the Kurus or, you know, connected with them. Mm-hmm. Like that. You have the Yadus and you have the Kurus. And so then whoever's connected with them. So.
It mentions the Kurus and the Srinjayas worship Krishna.
Yes. So it's just at different times they're in different, like in the Satyayuga, the demons and the devotees were on different planetary systems. Right? In the Treta Yuga, they were on the same planet but different continents. Then in the Dwapara, they're in different families. And in the Kali Yuga, they're in the same body. That's why you have the devotional side and the non-devotional side. Yes.
In Mika devotion, I just said that Srila Prabhupada said that Kshatriya is one person who tried to avoid other people to be in Maya.
Yes. That's the whole point. Is now the king, why are they so worried if people are following the Varnashram system? Because only in Varnashram, then they'll take up, they're in the position to take up the actual purpose of human life. Because if they're below, they're not performing their duties, akarma, how will they get any benefit? Because only if you act in a appropriate way can you engage in devotional service. And if you're doing vikarma, then you're doing activities against devotional service. So that's why they're seeing that everybody's rightly situated. So here, then, to do this, they all have to be conquered. They all have to be therefore agreeable with him. But then they have to go the step further to see that it's worship of Krishna is the actual real thing. Is that? Yes.
We see Yudhishthira Maharaj is doing his best, trying what he's trying. But some say, like Duryodhana's party, they're still not convinced. That's why the battle happens then afterwards.
But what can do? But at the end of the day, who's left standing? You know, it's like Prabhupada told that Russian academic. You know, at the time of death, then we'll see who's right. You know? And I'm sure it'll be made very obvious to the man. You know, first thing when they point out that the three-headed dogs are not because he's been drinking vodka. Like that. They're three-headed and they're there.
as a result of his
drinking. Yeah, that's there. As a result, but not because he's drinking now. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, if you know the glories of bhakti to me, why do you give up bhakti for performing a Rajasuya sacrifice? So then Yudhishthira says, because of what I just said, you should let the world see your power. You are to be worshipped by all persons worthy of worship, Deva Deva. Even though we know that by service to you all the devatas are satisfied, still let the world know. Right? The devatas, you worship Krishna, they're satisfied, but in this way then they all get to know that Krishna is the Supreme. So that's how, because he's going to use it just as a preaching tool. Like that. So he's going to make it obvious. Right? So he's using the secondary aspect, but it's direct preaching. So that's the thing, is the idea that, okay, I use forms that are not the traditional method. And then in that, I will also not, according to tradition, present necessarily directly devotional service. But we can't, that's not how the preaching works. The preaching is whatever is the medium that you can function within, or the medium that the people that you want to deal with are functioning in, you use that medium, but you directly bring in God consciousness. Somebody says that's the difference. They're taking it as that, you know, it's directly about God consciousness and it's a direct activity. Or it's not a direct activity, it's not directly about Krishna consciousness. What about it's a non-direct activity and it's directly about Krishna? That's Vedic soft preaching. You know, that's just, you know, the way it's done. So when everybody follows the Veda, you don't have to use that. But you use the area in which they do. Then it becomes more specific. Their Kshatriya is who uses that method. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Kshatriyas, they perform a particular activity under the guidance of Brahmanas. So this particular Rajasya sacrifice that Yudhishthira Maharaj is performing is being directed by Narada Muni. Who's the Brahman? Who's the Brahmanas?
They'll have somebody. Means it's under the Brahmins. That's how they do everything. But who's going to be the Acharya in this sacrifice and all that? Then we'll have to see. If it explains it here,
Vyasadeva
will be the Acharya. Mm-hmm. Like that. Narada Muni generally doesn't get involved in this. Mm-hmm. If there's some kirtan involved, that he'll do it. But the other things, you generally never see him take up the priestly duties. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, not that he couldn't, but he just doesn't. There's no need. There's so many other people there.
All the major sages come.
All the major sages, and then they take up all the positions. Udgata and everything. Okay. So that'll be all this told in the verse. Okay. In your present avatar, full of mercy for all the people, Iha, let these people, Esha Loka, materialists generally, who are astonished only by wealth, see the power of serving your lotus feet. Right? Because they're generally only astonished by material wealth, and then they see what's beyond that, then they can be astonished there. Right? He then illustrates this. The Kurus and Srinjayas worship you, whereas Duryodhan and others do not worship you. Show the position of each. I am doing this in order to show to the materialists the glory of bhakti rendered to you. You can do nothing, Vibho. You can do anything. Where did I get? Because Narada. I was still hanging up. That's okay. You can do anything, Vibho. Therefore, this is nothing. Oh, there it goes. Therefore, this is nothing for you. The accompanying purpose mentioned by Narada, the desire to gain of wealth to serve Krishna. The accompanying purpose mentioned by Narada, the desire to gain of wealth to serve Krishna, he did not reveal out of shyness. Right? It means because in that he's going to get wealth, but that wealth will all be used to do the sacrifice so they can worship Krishna. But because he's getting wealth and all that, then he's feeling a little shy, so he doesn't mention that part. He just mentions this part, because this is the actual main part. To do that, then you have to do all that. You know, like we're saying, yeah, okay, it's going to be a big festival. We want to do really nice things for Krishna and this and that. We'll do this, we'll do that. Everybody will be, you know,
very happy and absorbed and all that, doesn't mean that there isn't the element of money and marketing and arranging and all that, but the primary being there, then all these others have. You could say, no, but without that, this won't happen. The point is without the primary, there's no even point to the secondary. Right? So, Maharshi Yudhishthira continued, within your mind, there can be no differentiation as, quote, this one is mine and that one is another's, end quote, because you are the supreme absolute truth. It's all his. The soul of all beings, always equipoised in enjoying transcendental happiness within yourself. Just like the heavenly desire tree, you bless all who properly worship you, granting their desired fruits in proportion to the service they render you. There is nothing wrong in this. Right, so as they surrender, as they worship, then he reciprocates that if it's done properly. Right, so, yeah, that all you bless all who properly worship you, not just they make something up or that, and you grant according to the desire and proportion of the service they render. So, how proper it is, and the proportion, and then that's how we get results. Does that make sense? So the point is it's about pleasing him. That's how it works. Because if you please him, then all these material facilities are there. Lakshmi is already there. If you have Narayan, you have Lakshmi. But if you're worshiping Narayan to get Lakshmi, then it's that's not proper. And the proportion of service is not much, so you don't get so much. The BBT purport states, Srila Sridhar Swami explains that a desire tree has no material attachments or partiality, but simply bestows its fruits upon those who deserve them and not upon others. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada adds, Jiva Goswami Prabhupada adds that a desire tree does not think, this person is fit to worship me, but that other person is not. Rather, a desire tree is satisfied with all who properly serve it. And the Lord acts in the same way, as explained here by King Yudhishthira. So as if we do the things we're supposed to do properly, then it works out. We can't do them non-properly and expect it'll be good, but when we do it properly, then it always works out. Does that make sense? Yes.
The point of proportion, I'm not getting that.
The greater the surrender, the greater the results. I'm doing it correctly, but I'm not so surrendered, so I'll get a full result of that little bit of surrender. I'm doing it properly, I'm surrendering more, I get a greater result.
Is that a Pradyumna aspect of the Sambandha?
You would have that aspect in it, yes. The desire is to please Krishna and all that. So, is there? You know, it means you have proper knowledge. You understand the goal properly. But yeah, you're maintaining the proper attitude. And the Lord acts in the same way, as explained here by King Yudhishthira. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti adds that no one should accuse Lord Krishna of being envious of one person and showing favoritism towards another, since the Lord is Sva Sukha Nu Bhuti, experiencing his own happiness within himself. He has nothing to gain or lose in relationship to conditioned souls, right? So anything being offered to him, even you take the most valuable stuff offered to him, is still his. So whatever happiness is there in having that, he already has that, because he's had it before you had it. Right? Because it's him. But when it's done in devotion, that's where you say, that's what catches Krishna. Right? That's the whole point we're learning in this chapter. It's the devotion that catches, not the greatness of something or the specialness. Oh, if we do it this way, then that'll be nice, and if we don't, then that's not very nice. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. Rather, he reciprocates according to how they approach him. Srila Prabhupada very nicely sums up this point as follows in his rendering of King Yudhishthira's statement. Quote, if one takes to Krishna consciousness, his life becomes fulfilled both materially and spiritually.
This does not mean that you are partial to the Krishna conscious person and indifferent to the non-Krishna conscious person. You are equal to everyone. That is your declaration. You cannot be partial to one and not interested in others, because you are sitting in everyone's heart as the super soul and giving everyone the respective results of its fruit of activities. You give every living entity the chance to enjoy this material world as he desires. As the super soul, you are sitting in the body along with the living entity, giving him the results of his own actions as well as opportunities to turn towards your devotional service by developing Krishna consciousness. You openly declare that one should surrender unto you, giving up all other engagements, and that you will take charge of him, giving him relief from the reactions of all sins. You are like the desire tree in the heavenly planet, which awards benediction according to one's desires. Everyone is free to achieve the highest perfection, but if one does not so desire, then your awarding of lesser benedictions is not due to partiality. Right, so once somebody got more and somebody got less, it's not because of partiality, it's because of just their desire. You can say, no, but I wanted it, but the point is that you also have to properly perform the action with the proper knowledge. You know, does that make sense? So that all goes together. So that makes sense? Yes.
Maharaj, in this context of Pandavas and Kauravas, we see this very clearly. Though it is openly seen that Krishna is favoring the Pandavas, but there is Balramji, who is like, you know, praying Duryodhana, who gives all the good advice, and even after doing everything, then it is Duryodhana who clearly goes against the wish of Krishna and all.
But that's the demons. Point is that Duryodhana, you know, his nature is so strong, then club fighting would be natural for him. So who's the best club fighter, right? Balaram. He always carries one around, right? So therefore, learning from him, then it's the best. And because he respects him as the best, he as a student, deals properly, and therefore he has Balaram's mercy. But because he's going against Krishna's mercy, and Balaram being a devotee of Krishna, therefore it won't work out in the end. Ultimately, it's about Krishna's satisfaction. So if Krishna wants to kill Duryodhana, that's the way it's going to be.
So it's very interesting to see how Krishna...
Yeah, so he does all these things because you're dealing with a lot of things at once. Yeah. So, yeah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Your decision is perfect, O King, and thus your noble fame will spread to all the worlds. O tormentor of your enemies," footnote 46, "O killer of enemies," calling Yudhishthira in this way, Krishna bestows upon him the power of conquer, to conquer all kings, the power to conquer all kings. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So, he's saying, your decision is perfect, you'll do this, your fame will be spread. What is this meaning? It means that he'll get Krishna's mercy, and so that's why it'll spread. But Krishna is performing, just like he's a cousin saying, very nice, yeah, you can do all this. So Yudhishthira Maharaj is dealing, you know, his cousin to cousin, but he's the Supreme Lord also. Then he's revealing to him, as his cousin who's the Supreme Lord, we're going to do this because I want him to worship you. But Krishna responds, then we see just as the cousin, yes, you do this, then everything will, you know, you'll be greatly respected and all that. Indeed, my Lord, for the great sages, the forefathers and demigods, for our well-wishing friends, and indeed for all living entities, the performance of this king of Vedic sacrifices is desirable. So, so all these different aspects, then being... it'll be good for everybody, because everybody who's invited and everybody they're connected with, and that will all get the benefit by seeing Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that in the next three verses, the Lord encourages Maharaj Yudhishthira. The Lord continued, "First, conquer all kings, bring the earth under your control, and collect all the required paraphernalia. Then execute this great sacrifice." Right, because they have to pay tribute. So then in that way he collects everything. "These brothers of yours, O Krishna, O King, have taken birth as partial expansions of the demigods ruling various planets. And you are so self-controlled that you have conquered even me." Right? So they're these great personalities. and he's conquered Krishna, who's the greatest, so then what can't be done? And you who are so self-controlled that you have conquered even me, who am unconquerable for those who cannot control their senses. Right? So when you control the senses, engaging in Krishna's service, then that's how Krishna is conquered. But when we engage in our own senses, that doesn't conquer Krishna. Right? Because he is the senses anyway. So what are you adding? So, you know, what do you bring to the table? Especially since the table is Krishna. And anything you bring to the table is Krishna. So it's like, what can you bring? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, it is said that Bhima was born of the demigod Vayu and that Arjuna was born of the demigod Indra, whereas King Yudhishthira himself was born of the demigod Yamaraj. Lord Krishna told King Yudhishthira that he is conquered by the love of one who has conquered his senses. One who has not conquered his senses cannot conquer the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the secret of devotional service. To conquer the senses means to engage them constantly in the service of the Lord. So that's how they're conquered, is that they're engaged in the Lord's service. Not conquering means they stop using them. It means they're engaged in the Lord's service. Because that's what they're for. Right? The specific qualification of all the Pandava brothers was that they always engaged their senses in the Lord's service. One who thus engages in senses becomes purified. And with purified senses, the devotee can actually render transcendental loving service to the Lord and conquer him. But when you do that, then the senses become purified. Then with purified senses, then you can serve the Lord very nicely. So the more we engage them in the Lord's service, the more we become purified, then the more we're able to connect everything to Krishna. The Lord concluded, no one in this world, even a demigod, what to speak of an earthly king, can defeat my devotee with his strength, beauty, fame, or riches. So then who Krishna has bestowed his mercy on, no one can defeat them. No one would have more than them, whatever the category. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.